kwakuwang kwamangako na ugugu na undukufu ata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of Radio Harambe, the official podcast of JamboEveryone.com and the unofficial podcast of Disney's Animal Kingdom and Walt Disney World. You can find all of our content, including our blog, conservation shop, YouTube channel, as well as Facebook and Twitter links by going to JamboEveryone.com. On this show, we will talk about news from the Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. Then in our final segment, we're going to take you on a guided tour through the Maharaja Jungle Trek. I am your host, Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe Studios. Joining me from some far off locale is our own Safari Mike. Mike, where are you today?
Well, you know, I'm probably not the smartest wildlife expert in the world. I've decided in the middle of the July heat to visit Arizona. We are listening to coyote howls here in the middle of the night, so hopefully it won't interrupt the podcast at all. But, you know, we're studying what the different meanings of the different whelps and howls and all that kind of stuff are. So that's what we're doing out here today.
Mike, that may be the reason why you work for us and not for the Wildlife Conservation Society.
Probably.
We're going to begin today with our local news from Disney's Animal Kingdom. First up on the docket is that it appears from the pictures I've seen and from what people have told me that the Nemo Fast Pass Plus queue is now completed. I don't like saying that. Fast Pass Plus doesn't work for me. Like the construction walls are down around Finding Nemo the Musical. Now we have our Fast Pass Plus queue there, all out in the open. We talked about this program, the Fast Pass Plus thing, a lot more in previous episodes. You can certainly go back and listen to those if you haven't already, and their relation to the Animal Kingdom attractions. This appears to be the first one of these to be completed.
Yes, and you know, we talked about this in previous episodes. I'm not sure why anybody would Fast Pass Plus Finding Nemo the Musical, but be that as it may, it's ready to go.
Snark begins.
It's ready to go.
Next is Festival of the Lion King. Probably the worst kept secret is that the Festival of the Lion King is getting a new theater, or at least that's what we assume. Recently, people have been taking photos of construction equipment, cranes and stuff, just behind the temporary walls that surround the Harambe section of the park. It looks like the new theater for Festival Lion King is progressing, and I mention this not only to report that the project seems to be moving forward and seems to be, you know, earth moving here, but also because I wanted to talk a bit about what I just referred to as the worst kept secret in Disney World. Rumors tell us that this project is Festival of the Lion King moving to its more appropriate location, in my opinion, in Harambe, with the inclusion of a new theater, permanent theater, to make room for the Avatar project, which is taking over Camp Minnie Mickey. We talked about that in the last episode as well. The walls are up. Every guest in the park can see and presumably hear a major project going on, yet Disney still has not announced anything at all to the public. Well, they haven't. So we can only assume some sort of communication from the mouse is coming sooner rather than later on this. Can we assume that?
I wouldn't bet on it. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they didn't announce the Grand Floridian at the DVC Grand Floridian for, I mean, how? I mean, they were building a building, and anybody right. who worked monorail would be able to see the DVC wing of the Grand Floridian.
Yeah, but you can't build up construction walls there.
Yeah, they denied the existence of Bay Lake Tower for like 2 years. So, I mean, it doesn't shock me at all. I would say a week before it's ready to open, they'll probably announce, hey, you know what? Build the Festival of the Lion King.
I think it'll probably be part of whatever announcement they're going to give regarding Avatar the next time we hear about that. I mean, I can only assume it's all going to be lumped into the same project. Listen, this is a thing with Disney over the last few years. I mean, for better or for worse, are the projects that seem to be coming in are big ones, and this is a big one. You know, I can consider it along the lines of the new Fantasyland or that kind of thing. I mean, we're doing stuff here. And it, they tend to be inconsistent with how they refer this information out to the public. I never for the life of me can understand why, when you're actually building something like this, you wouldn't tell people what you're building to get some kind of excitement involved, you know, through the community. But hey, somebody somewhere considers it a good idea to keep it to themselves, I guess.
Right. I mean, I understand we made fun a little bit about the DVC thing. I mean, the reason they didn't announce that was because they're still trying to sell other places.
Right. So that they didn't want to announce.
And it's interesting to me that, and not to go off topic too much, but with the Snow White Mind Coaster, they're making no bones about it. Obviously, they can't really. It's smack dab in the middle of Fantasyland. But they actually have like little cutouts where people can look in and see what the progress is and watch the workers working.
That's hilarious.
But for some reason, they're still not doing that with Harambe and stuff. I mean, maybe just moving Festival of Lion King doesn't promote the same kind of excitement as the Snow White Mind Coaster does. So right. You know, nobody's going to really care. But, you know, it is what it is.
Good point. Our next story is... These are the stories I love to read about when they come across my my computer screen. One thing you may not realize is that zoo animals are often moved around from zoo to zoo across the country and even throughout the world. The Association of Zoos and Aquariums is the organization that accredits zoos. It also sets guidelines, and policies for animal well-being and care. And one thing they stretch is the movement of animals for breeding purposes to ensure a strong genetic stock. Especially that of endangered animals. So here's an example of the new from the news of what I mean. The hippopotamus exhibit at the Memphis Zoo featured a daughter and mother pairing. And the mother, who was 51 years old, recently died. First, I'm staggered by the 51 years old, but we'll move on through that. Memphis wanted another hippo to keep the daughter, whose name is Splish, from getting lonely. And that makes all the sense in the world. So enter Disney's Animal Kingdom into the story. Disney sent, and I believe you pronounced this Binti, a 15-year-old hippo who was born at the Denver Zoo in 1998 to Memphis as a companion for Splish. Binti's traveling most of America here. Matt Thompson, the director of animal programs at the Memphis Zoo, said that Binti, quote, seems to be a great companion for Splish. They have been getting to know each other inside. And now it's time for Binti to explore the outside exhibit. So it looks like things are going well. We wish Binti, all the luck at the Memphis Zoo. And I've also read in part of this that they are opening up a new state-of-the-art exhibit called the Zambezi River Hippo Camp. So it looks like Binti's got herself some pretty cool new digs coming.
Yeah, well, Memphis Zoo is a quality institution. It's, you know, a very good zoo. So Binti's going to a good place. But yes, this is a good example of what the AZA can do. I mean, back in the old days, 50, 60 years ago, zoos would keep their collection, you know, hold on to them like a grim death, and would only move animals if they got traded or would sell them to different zoos and stuff. But now with the AZA will move these animals around for the benefit of the animals. Most of the time, as you said, for breeding purposes, especially with endangered species to promote good genetic health of the population of the zoo animals, but also in cases like this, just so that, you know, a hippopotamus won't get lonely. I mean, it seems like it's pretty obvious that, you know, one zoo says, hey, you know, I only have one hippo here. She's kind of lonely. Anybody else have some extra hippos that can bring them over here? And, you know, the animal kingdom does have a pretty solid collection of hippos.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know, for example, the animal kingdom just recently got an additional white rhino. So this kind of stuff happens more than you think.
Yeah, read about it a bit. This is a cool story, too, because I love these things that the Animal Kingdom does. July 25th, which is this week, hopefully you've downloaded this in time, is Tiger Day. The Disney's Animal Kingdom will be celebrating Tiger Day, according to the Disney Parks blog. Quote, guests visiting Disney's Animal Kingdom on July 10th, 25th will discover even more about tigers and learn about efforts to conserve them as the park celebrates Tiger Day with special activities at Rafiki's Planet Watch. Families can test their skills at identifying tiger calls, find out where in the world tigers live and how they travel through the forest, and see if they can leap as far as a tiger, which I pretty much guarantee you they can't. And that's among other activities. Rest assured, we'll have much more about the Animal Kingdom's tigers during our feature section in the Maharaja Jungle Trek. But until then, these kind of things, they do them about once a month, or maybe not quite that often, but there's quite a few of these in the course of the year. And the tiger one is, you know, is cool. I love
this stuff. Probably like 8 or 9 of them. I know they do tigers. I know they do vultures. They do a bat day on Halloween.
Right.
I think there's an elephant day somewhere along the way. Yeah, so, probably you know, obviously people are not going to plan their vacation around it like they would, you know, some major event like the holiday season or something like that. But if you happen to be down there for the week or this coming week, maybe you would say, hey, you know what, let's make sure we hit Animal Kingdom on this day because, you know, the kids will have a good time with it or whatnot. There are fun little events that, you know, just change things up a little bit.
It's limited time magic you may actually be interested in.
It's much better than the stupid Christmas in July thing. But oh, my Lord, is that pathetic.
Let's not digress too far into that one because we can go on about that for a half an hour. Okay, so let's move over to the rumor mill a little bit here. And again, this is a story that we mentioned probably on episode one. Our friends, the Disney Hipsters, have been reporting for the past few weeks on a rumor concerning a nighttime water parade coming to the Animal Kingdom. Again, we spoke about this, and we talked a little bit about what we think it might be. It's pretty much conjecture, but let me just give you the bullet points. According to the Hipsters, they feel very confident in this rumor, the Rivers of Light parade already has gone through initial testing at the park after hours, and that tells me it's close to being a reality. So there's a lot more to the story. What I suggest you do is go to DisneyHipsters.com. They have a story on their blog, which is, you know, probably right on the front page if you're reading this when this comes out. And you could read all the details they have. Plus, if you kind of search through it, you'll see some of the other stories they've written. I know they've done at least one more where they discuss this. Let me just give you a little history about before we talk about it. This rumor of the Rivers of Light goes back to, I want to say, the 2006, 2005 time frame. And an idea of a park closing event of some kind has been something that goes back to 1998, let's be honest. When the term Rivers of Light kind of coined itself, it was one of these rumor mill things. So it's, I don't know if we're pulling the right name here. I don't know. The name seems a little strange, but whatever. I digress. Around 2008, it was reported, principally by Jim Hill, let's give him credit, that the idea was shelved for reasons that dealt with mostly physical changes that would need to be made to the pathways and, of course, the plant life that surround the river. Essentially, physical changes that would need to have been made in order for a full park to see this, assuming that you would have a full park late in at night that would want to see this. But it now seems this idea may not only be back on the table, but it may also be ready for, you know, some kind of an announcement or some kind of soft opening if they're testing it now. You know, it could be a year away. It could be 6 months away if they're testing it and the tests have gone well. What I'll say is this. I believe that that Imagineering discussed this. I believe that they discussed a lot of things. I know that they want to use the river for some use, and they always have. It is a beautiful waterway and certainly the most impressive in probably any theme park outside of Disney Sea. It is an incredible waterway, and it can be used for something amazing. I don't agree with Jim Hill when he said back in 2008 that there would be too much stuff that needed to be moved and changed in order to see it. I think there are rooms to see it, and I think to expand those, there wouldn't really need much of an expansion or much destruction of plant life. There's really just not that much that needs to be done, a couple of trimmings here and there. I don't think they need to build new platforms or new walkways. The walkways go around that river, and they always have. So I don't particularly agree with that, but I see where he's coming from with that. But it did disappear. It certainly did. And I get, Mike, we'll talk about this a little bit, but what I'll say is I get conflicting reports on this, but I tend to think they're right.
I certainly hope so. You know, I think it would be a real game changer for the park to have a late night, evening closing event. It would keep people there for the event. That's always been the problem with the Animal Kingdom. While every other park, people trickled out, a little bit towards the end of the day. The majority of people wanted to stay there for Illuminations or Wishes or Fantasmic, and Animal Kingdom never had that. I mean, you could see back when the Hollywood Studios decided to close down Fantasmic for, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week and just play it a couple nights a week. It was devastating to the park. People were gone by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's sort of the issue that the Animal Kingdom is having. The most intriguing part to me of the whole rumor, and the one that added this added information that the hipsters had today, was the use of projection technology on the tree itself to highlight the certain animals on the tree, and using projection technology to highlight certain animals on the tree during the course of the show. That sounds fantastic. Yeah, and it also sounds, it also seems to me, and knowing nothing but what the hipsters have said publicly from their sources, whatever they may be, that seems like this show will emphasize not Disney characters, not so much, certainly not Avatar characters or anything of that nature, but, you know, actual animals, and incorporate that theme into this nighttime event, which I think would be perfect.
Yeah. What we talked about off air before we came on was that both of us, you know, neither of us can confirm or deny this, but both of us know that the Disney hipsters, who we both respect and we both really like, and you should check them out, you should check their show out, they're terrific. They've never done this. This is not like, you know, we all know of the websites out there that throw out rumors left and right, and, you know, half of them mean nothing. These guys have never done this before, and they've been on the air for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So makes you feel more confident, you know?
Right. I mean, they're not the boy that cried wolf.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I believe them. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah, and read the articles, guys. DisneyHipsters.com. Read the posting that they wrote, and you'll see what we mean by that. They're very confident on this. Finally, and this is news, but it's also a shameless plug. This past week, we debuted a new line of shirts that I wanted to mention. Our Not a Half Day Park shirts. And listen, the next time you go to Animal Kingdom, you'll want one of these to show your pride and love for the park. These shirts, they look great. The designer, his name is Ed Peterson, did a fantastic job on these. And they're totally customizable because we use Zazzle to produce them. Go to Zazzle.com/Jombo, everyone, and check them out. If you're the next time you're at a park or, you know, some kind of Disney meetup, I want to see a picture of somebody in these because they really look cool. Also, we'll donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners, which you can find on our conservation page at jomboeveryone.com. And the rest of it go really to help set the costs of what we do here, Radio Harambe and Jombo Everyone. So, last shameless plug, Zazzle.com/Jombo Everyone.
There's one more local news story.
What's that? Oh, yes, I forgot. And this just breaking. Apparently, opening up in August 4th, which is only a couple of weeks away, there's going to be something that Disney's calling the Garden Kiosk. Found at the Animal Kingdom, it'll be by the Adventurer's Outpost, the new meet and greet, the new Mickey meet and greet on Discovery Island. This is designed for, basically, it's an informational kiosk, it looks like, to make decisions easier for people looking who have, or dining decisions easier for people with, you know, basically food allergies or what you would call dietary needs or, you know, that kind of thing. If you're gluten-free, you know what I'm getting at here. Apparently, they'll also be offering some things. I'm reading this directly off WDWMagic.com, who just posted this, a few hours ago. They say they're going to be offering things like vegetables, granola bars, and gluten-free beer. And the other thing we kind of assume is that if a kiosk like this kind of like informational thing, where basically what we're doing here is guests are able to come up to this kiosk and say, you know, I need gluten free, I am vegetarian, I'm vegan, you know, what have you. And they'll be able to say where you should eat and what you should eat so that you're kind of better prepared, which, believe me, I'm none of those things.
Uh-huh.
But I would imagine the process that I always hear, especially dining people, you know, people who are experts on the Disney dining thing, say is, you know, just go up and ask somebody. And then the chef comes out and you kind of got to talk to him about what is there. I don't know about that. You know, I would rather know beforehand. So this seems like a good idea to me.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it gives you, well, the way it would work before is you would, let's say, go to the Flame Tree Barbecue, and when you got up to the front of the line or were buying your stuff, you would say, "Listen, I'm gluten free. What can I get?"
Right.
This would give you the you know, the knowledge beforehand, so that you can make an educated decision as to actually where you want to go. Because the last thing you want to do is walk up to the Flame Tree Barbecue, say, "Hey, you know, dairy free," and they give you your option, and it's not interesting to you.
Right.
And then you have to go walk over to Restaurantosaurus and ask them there, and you know their option is not that interesting. And then you have to go all the way back to Pizzafari or whatever.
Right, right.
This gives you the knowledge you have beforehand, and then you, as your family or whoever is together, saying, "Hey, you know, the best option for me being gluten free is, I don't know, Pizzafari for whatever reason." Well, that's where you go, and it just makes it a lot easier for you to get where you want to go.
Now, you can bet that if this works out, these are going to start popping up over the other parks. So that's it for the local news. We'll take a short break here. Be back with our world news in just a second on Radio Harambe. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jombo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to JomboEveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. I am your host, Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios and joining us from, I guess, the desert in Arizona in July, which was really well thought out. Safari Mike has, and he is here with us today with our world news. Mike, what you got?
Sure. So let's start off with a couple of, you know, rather lengthy closings coming up for people who are planning on touring in the fall. The Walt Disney World Railroad that obviously circles Magic Kingdom is closing from September 30th to October 20th. Fairly lengthy closing. I know I'm going to be at the parks during that time period, so I'm a little disappointed that I won't be able to ride the railroad.
I'll be there a couple of days later, so that's wipe the sweat off the brow on that one when you say October.
This is rather interesting. This one, the Tiki Room, was going apparently to be closed for a good solid month from July 31st to August 29th. But I heard today that was actually removed from the closure list, and it's going to remain open. Not sure why. I haven't heard any reasons as to that.
I'm going to give you a quick guess on that. I think that maybe we're looking to finally do a real update on this.
And possibly.
You know what I mean? Or maybe even get rid of it. I know that's sacrilege, but I think it's going to end up being one of those things only in Disneyland.
I hope not. I mean, one of the things
I hope not too, but I think that's what's going to happen.
One of the things I had heard is, I forget where it is, I guess, is it Tokyo Disneyland, where they have a tiki room that involves Stitch?
Yeah, but it's very popular. Like everything else they claim they bring over.
Anyway.
Like Lights Motor Action. Hugely popular.
We'll deal with that some other day. But the big one, to me anyway, the most interesting one, is the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience Playground in Hollywood Studios is closing from September 3rd all the way to November 20th. So that's, you know, almost 3 months. And to, you know, just clean up a playground, it seems to me that would take a couple of weeks, not 3 months.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, you know, you hear things that they're going to convert it to, you know, a Bug's Life playground.
Right.
Fit in with Pixar Place. I mean, maybe that's what's going to happen. Certainly, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience is long forgotten. Yeah. In the minds of most Disney fans, so maybe we're going to get a completely different kind of attraction there.
I when you told me this story before we went on the air, I forgot that was even still there.
I mean, my kids.
The last time I went in there,
Yeah, I mean, my kids liked it when they were a little bit younger, and they'll still go in there at 9 and 11. But, you know, I mean, if they do change it to, like, a Bug's Life, it's not going to really require that much change. I mean, it's still giant grass and leaves and all that kind of stuff. You just pull out some stuff and throw in maybe a Flick statue here or there or whatever.
There you go.
So, you know, I could see something like that for sure.
Right.
All right, so let's move on to this one, you know, is important for people planning on going to Disney in the next year and a half or so, which is probably most of our audience. Downtown Disney, the three parking lots at Downtown Disney that take up from Disney Quest all the way to the Pleasure Island bus stops are closing so that they can begin the process of building the two parking garages.
Oh my God.
So at the end of the day, parking will be much better. But for now, this is going to be a real mess, especially during the upcoming holiday season.
Where are they going to park people in Christmas?
Well, the Team Disney Corporation lot, which is not too far from there.
But a bus ride away.
Yes, is going to be open to the public, and they'll be able to shuttle you from that lot to Downtown Disney. Not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, progress is continuing. I mean, they recently also, as a related story, closed the last store that was located at Pleasure Island, that Apricot Lane clothing boutique, whatever store it was, that's actually gone now. So everything other than the two food places are gone now from Pleasure Island, and the lots are closed. So Disney Springs is getting into gear.
I think I said on this show, or maybe one of the ones I was on, I think it was this show, that I have decided when Disney Springs was announced that I was not going to go back to Downtown Disney until it was finished. Mm-hmm. I was maybe exaggerating a bit there. I'm not exaggerating anymore. There is no way I'm going. I have a car. No way.
Yeah, you have to take a bus now. You know, if you're staying off property, it's going to be brutal. God. Especially if you go anytime from like just before Thanksgiving on, it's going to be rough. And on the weekends, forget.
It's rough now.
Yeah, it is.
Parking isn't great, especially at the marketplace. The parking is really bad.
And that's the only lot that's left.
That's it. Yep. Man, it's just going to be a disaster.
Yeah, it's going to be rough.
Oh, boy.
Here's a shocking story. Tom Staggs has said that My Magic Plus, they tested it with people at the Contemporary Resort over the last few weeks. He said that those people have actually spent more money than the typical Disney guest. So he is, you know, pounding his chest saying My Magic Plus has boosted sales. I am not in any way surprised that Disney has announced this. I mean, I would have been shocked if they had come out and said, actually, you know what? My Magic Plus doesn't seem to make have any benefit whatsoever.
Ridiculous. So your first initial shocked was like when those Captain Reynolds shocked. I'm shocked to find there's gambling in this establishment. You were shocked to hear that Disney would be high-stepping on My Magic Plus before they have any reason to do so.
and let's be honest. They're selling essentially bling for these My Magic Plus fans.
Are.
You know, these charms,
right?
These the covers for them. If they sold one, they could say, hey,
it's boosted sales.
Yes, sales have been boosted. I mean, that's the reality of it. If they could sell one, they could say, hey, listen, you know, we made $4 more than we would have if we didn't have My Magic Plus.
There you go.
They'll never give the figure. I mean, they certainly didn't give any figures for this. They just said it boosted sales. So My Magic Plus progresses on.
Here we go.
Brief little story. Extra Magic Hours are now gone at the two water parks. At least for the remainder of the summer, according to Disney.
Interesting decision.
Yeah, I mean, I know they've been cutting down on Extra Magic Hours, of course, at the beginning of 2000. I guess it was 2013, this year.
Yeah.
They reduced the nighttime at Extra Magic Hours from 3 to 2. Cost-cutting measures, I guess they determined that they're not opening the water parks at 8 a.m. anymore to save money. That I can't think of any other reason. Certainly in the summertime, you're getting more people to go to them than anywhere else.
Does seem strange.
Finally, we are, I guess about 3 weeks away from the D23 Expo, and Disney has announced pretty much its schedule. And I just want to highlight some of the events and presentations. I am not going to go through the entire schedule. If you happen to be going to D23, I'm sure you already know the schedule and have made your decisions as to what you want to see.
Right.
However, there are people on the internet who, you know, Twitter, for example, who are anxiously awaiting any type of news. So this, I'm going to give you some of the times and days and times, I should say, and what the event is, where you might get some buzz from people tweeting out various information. First and foremost, it starts off at 10 a.m. on Friday with the Art and Imagination Animation at the Walt Disney Studios presentation. That kicks off the event. Bob Iger is going to speak, and then John Lasseter is going to come on board to talk about some of the things such as Frozen, The Good Dinosaur, which is the next Pixar movie to come out. They're going to debut a new Mickey Mouse short, and they're also going to give you some major announcements as to what the future holds for Disney Animation and Pixar. So come Friday morning, you'll probably get some information as to at least some general broad information as to what the future holds for Pixar and for Disney Animation.
You know, before you go on, I think everybody who, and I was among these people who were appointed, were happy with the John Lasseter, you know, sort of promotion and appointment to, you know, head creative, even though I would prefer Joe Rohde myself, but I'm sure you can figure that out. We're waiting for an impact on animation, a positive impact on Disney Animation. I'm hoping this is kind of the beginning of it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
I mean, Frozen seems to be something that people are excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Pixar needs to come up with something other than a sequel. New characters, original characters, something else that they can add to the lexicon. So hopefully these things are what we're going to be talking about here.
Well, it seems like the next couple of Pixar movies are originals. The Good Dinosaur seems like an interesting one.
Yeah.
And then there's the one, I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but it essentially takes place inside the mind of a teenage girl. So there's a couple of ones, and then you get to Finding Dory. So,
and he still is going to have to answer for Planes.
Well, Planes is not Pixar.
Yeah, but it's still Lasseter. He's no longer just the head of Pixar.
No, I know. And they're going to premiere Planes somewhere along the way, but I wasn't going to talk about that one.
Yeah, go ahead, never mind.
There's a couple of interesting ones that day too, by the way, Friday. Not that that really plays into what I said before, but I know they're doing a presentation about the Mystic Manor. I know Tony Baxter, I wish I was on this one, but Undiscovered Disneyland, Tony Baxter's coming out of retirement to talk about that one.
That's cool.
And then Marty Sklar is going to be talking about his new book, Dream It, Do It, which would be cool. But anyway, closing off Friday night is Broadway and Beyond, where they are going to talk about some of the things coming on in Disney's on Broadway. Maybe we'll start getting in some information as to the much-rumored Muppets Broadway presentation, and maybe I know they're talking about a Jungle Book for Broadway. Maybe you'll get some information on that.
Cool.
Then they seem to like open and close these days with these typical things, because Saturday they open up with something called Let the Adventures Begin, live action at the Walt Disney Studios, and that's Walt Disney Studios chairman Alan Horn is going to be talking about Saving Mr. Banks, Tomorrowland, so maybe we'll get some information as to what Tomorrowland is about.
Yeah.
And they'll talk about Thor, the Thor sequel coming up, and maybe you'll get some, you know, some information as to what's in store in the future for the live action portion of the studios. We'll see.
Yeah, we don't talk a lot about movies on here, but the trailer, the extended trailer for Saving Mr. Banks came out recently, and I honestly haven't seen so many Disney fans in such a happy uproar as I have this week over that trailer of that film. This is really something everybody's hoping and praying is going to be good. And if you can glean anything from a trailer, it certainly seems to be something they're putting a lot of effort and time into. So I think a lot of that's just going to build. The buzz and that's just going to build and build and build.
Right, right. There is a presentation also that Saturday at 5 o'clock, so be ready on Twitter for this. Crash Course in the Force Star Wars Saga 101.
Uh-oh.
Now, what they're talking about here, though, is just sort of a basic presentation as to Star Wars and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
However, rumors are flying rapidly all over the place that Disney is going to throw out here at D23 some information about what the next movie is going to be. I've even heard that, you know, don't be surprised if people like Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford make an appearance at somewhere along the way.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, and if it's going to be anywhere, it's probably going to be here. I don't see anything else Star Warsy unless they put it with the live action portion earlier in the morning. We'll see. The only other thing I would mention for the schedule here is on Sunday, there are 5 different spots, and all it says so far is Walt Disney Imagineering's 60th anniversary, and that just says more details to come about this presentation.
Hmm.
Now, we all have heard that there is no parks panel this year, and there's nothing on the schedule about Disney parks. I mean, obviously everybody knows in 2009... they had the big presentation where they busted out New Fantasyland and right. Star Wars 2.
Right.
And then in 2011, they had a parks panel and everybody was anxiously awaiting, you know, the next Epcot World Showcase Pavilion getting announced or Avatar Land details or what have you. Although I guess at that time there was no Avatar Land, but something about Animal Kingdom or what have you. And you got nothing. You got more details about the Snow White coaster and you got some stuff about Shanghai and Hong Kong. It was a huge disappointment.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing to say there's going to be a parks discussion. I don't know where they would put it. Maybe here with these Imagineering things. I'm just not sure.
I think they're going to say nothing. I really do. I think there's going to be nothing to be given here. I don't think they're going to backdoor this. I think there will be nothing. You will come out of this D23. If you're like me and your main focus is the parks, especially the U.S. parks, you're not going to hear anything.
I agree with you. I mean, if you go to this, if you're on the internet and looking at this and you're fascinated by what new movies are coming out, you're going to get plenty. Find all about, you know, Saving Mr. Banks. You know, maybe, you know, Tom Hanks will show up dressed up as Walt Disney or, you know, whatever. You'll get all that. But I don't think you're going to. If you're sitting there thinking you're going to get, hey, you know, they're going to make a big presentation about Star Wars Land at Hollywood Studios.
It ain't going
to
happen.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
Right.
I mean, seriously, you really don't hold your breath.
It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, perhaps, you know, we talked about this at the beginning or at the local news, the hipsters rumor about a new parade. Maybe something minor relatively minor like that. You're not going to get Star Wars Land. You're not going to get. But, you know, maybe they'll do a little thing about a new parade coming to Animal Kingdom. Maybe you'll get some information about there's a new parade coming to Magic Kingdom. Maybe you'll get some of that info. Who knows?
I think you may get just mentions of things that have already been announced.
Yeah, maybe more details. I mean, I was hoping for some actual real details about Avatar Land. I don't think we're even getting that.
No.
So.
No. Is that it?
I believe that is it, good sir.
All right. Well, we're going to take another short break. And when we come back, we are going to take you on a tour through the Maharaja Jungle Trek. Coming back on Radio Harambe.
Come on, gang. Let's take it home.
If you're like me, you're an Animal Kingdom fan who is just a bit tired of listening to so-called Disney experts who criticize our beloved park for being a, quote, half-day park. Well, it's time to put your frustrations into action by going to the Jumbo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone and picking up one of our exclusive new Not a Half Day Park t-shirts. They look great, and we will donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners. The rest of it will go to helping keep Radio Harambe on the air and JumboEveryone.com on the web. Wear it the next time you visit the parks, or even better, the next time you attend a Disney fan meetup. Go to Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone today and wear your Animal Kingdom pride for all to see. Welcome back to episode 3 of Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride. Joining me is Safari Mike. This is our third and final segment of the show. And for today's feature, we're going to take you on a guided tour of the Maharaja Jungle Trek. I think of this section as sort of hold on to this podcast on your MP3 player or your iPod or what have you. And the next time you're in the Maharaja Jungle Trek, put us on and we'll take you on a little walk. Yeah, that's how I'm thinking of this. sort of an audio guided tour of Maharaja Jungle Trek. So before you enter the trek, you're standing in the middle of the Asia area. You have the Kali River Rapids off to your right. There's some swinging monkeys up in the air, and you're staring at the front door of the Maharaja Jungle Trek. While you're standing there, just wait for a second and let me give you a little bit of a backstory. The Maharaja Jungle Trek opened in March of 1999, along with the rest of the Asia area. The entire area opened less than a year after the entire Animal Kingdom opened. Though officially considered an expansion, Asia was part of the original plans, even included in much of the opening day literature and press information, but it simply was not completed in time for the grand opening. When it did open, however, the trek was the centerpiece attraction of Asia and represented not only an enormous expansion of animal species on offer at the park, but it also marked a crowning achievement in the history of zoological exhibit design. Imagineers love to tell a story in their attractions, and those stories serve as the backbone for this entire attraction's aesthetic makeup. And in fact, Maharaja Jungle Trek represents one of the most detailed and involved backstories developed for any Disney park attraction. The story is one of great rajas, a Sanskrit word meaning king or ruler. We learn the trek began life under the rule of one such raja named, difficult to pronounce, King Bhima Disimpati.
Okay.
We're just going to call him Bhima from now on.
That's fine.
Who in 1544 declared much of the land within the trek to be his own personal game reserve, where he and his guests could hunt animals in an enclosed area. Obviously, old Bhima wasn't much of a nature lover or a conservationist, but the king eventually got his just desserts as he was mauled by a tiger during a hunting expedition. The Raja's successors learned the lessons of Bhima's death and turned the area into a nature preserve, where the villagers of Anandapur would learn to live in harmony with the animals of the royal forest. It is a beautiful message, and one laid out before us throughout the length of the trek. But we begin our journey through the Maharaja Jungle Trek just outside the ruins of King Bhima's former hunting grounds in the lair of one of my favorite animals to see. So walk through the door, head to your first exhibit, and you'll find the ever-impressive Komodo dragon. Now, Mike.
Yes.
I have a quick question about Komodo dragons.
Sure.
That leads me to my other guilty pleasure, James Bond films. In the latest Skyfall, two guys were eaten by Komodo dragons. So my question for you is, are Komodo dragons dangerous?
They are a little bit. Yeah, they are. They are predators. They are the largest lizard in the world, and one of the largest reptiles in the world as well. They are interesting in that they are a very good example of a phenomenon called island gigantism. And what that means is, on islands that are separate from the mainland, you know, by a fair margin, certain animal species, because there are no predators such as tigers and leopards or whatnot, grow to disproportionate sizes. The moa, which is an extinct giant bird that was, you know, 12, 13, 14 feet tall, related to emus and things like that, is an example. And the Komodo is another. It is a monitor related to other monitors that has just grown to huge sizes. And they are dangerous in that they, for the most part, they eat carrion, which is, for those who don't know, dead animals. But they do hunt. And they also actually carry an infection, for the most part, in their mouths. When they bite, you can get sepsis, which is a deadly infection. Unfortunately for keepers, because the Komodo dragon is fed, relatively clean food as opposed to, you know, dead, rotting carcasses, they don't carry it at the Animal Kingdom. But if you are in, for some reason, in Komodo, try to avoid getting bitten by a Komodo dragon. You could be in for a rough day.
As you finish taking your photographs of this incredible animal, and oftentimes these guys pose for you. They tend to hang out on the rocks and sort of relax. Is that a warmth thing? Are they doing the kind of snake thing of lying out in the sun?
You're exactly right. Like all reptiles, they are what's called cold-blooded, which is a misnomer, really. what it means is they don't have any, there's no way for them to control their own body heat, where you and I, as long as we're feeling all right, have a 98.6 degree temperature. Lizards, snakes, and the like generate their internal body heat from laying out in the sun. So they have to lay out in the sun for a while to generate enough heat to have the energy to go and feed or whatnot.
Now you're going to continue past the Komodo dragons, following the path. I believe here you're going to see a really cool sign that tells you there's tigers. something like there's a possibility of tigers being around in the area, kind of like getting you ready for the reveal of the tigers. But you'll see that sign there. You're in a, obviously in a forest. You're going to pass over a small bridge, and you're going to see an area where there are birds, I believe waterfowls. I think they're down to your left.
Correct.
And this, I believe, is the former home of a different animal, correct?
Yeah, when the animal kingdom opened, they had Malayan tapirs there. The animal kingdom actually, I believe, only had one tapir at any point in time, and she was an older tapir. Even when the animal kingdom opened, she had she was 16 plus years old, I think, when the animal kingdom actually opened, and she has unfortunately since passed away. The animal kingdom has not gotten any new tapirs. Instead, they have, like you said, waterfowl here, and I believe their white-naped cranes are in here as well.
So, as you continue walking, you'll see a rock work in front of you. And as you come to the door, which you have no other choice but to go that way, you will find a little hint of what you have to come, which is bats.
Right.
Now, you walk through the door into the bat exhibit, and it is quite an exhibit. But let's, before we get into the bats themselves, let's talk a little bit about what this exhibit is, because it isn't like everything else here. The whole thing is themed, correct?
Correct. This is the community hall for the people of Anandapur. And when you go in there, you will see all sorts of pamphlets and things like that, old newspapers. You know, there's usually an advertisement for something from Bollywood, you know, that kind of stuff. And up there, you'll see a blackboard that has the information about bats. The idea being there's going to be a lecture on the bats coming up soon. There's schedules for different events at the community hall and all that kind of stuff. But this is where the people of Anandapur, who are running this forest preserve, come to meet, discuss things, and, you know, look at the various, you know, pamphlets and brochures and advertisements and things like that.
I also love that when you walk in, there's two dual signs, one of which tells you where you can, which way to go if you don't want to see the bats.
Yeah, I mean, bats sometimes rub some people the wrong way, but I know people are a little bit frightened of them. Interestingly enough, I mean, they carry such a bad reputation here in the West, but in the Asia, especially in India, where, you know, you're supposed to essentially be an Anandapur. Bats are a sign of good luck and good fortune and are welcomed by people there. And hence, that's why it's in the community hall.
Is there not more than one species of bat in there? There's a small one and a bigger one, correct?
There are two. The big one is the Malayan, flying fox, which is perhaps the biggest bat in the world. It has a 6-foot wingspan. And it's actually the model for Dracula, even though it is not a vampire bat. It does not suck the blood of anything.
Right.
It is a fruit eater. It's unlike other bats that you see perhaps here in the United States that flit around at night and catching insects and stuff. The Malayan flying fox does not use echolocation to locate things. It has good eyesight and good sense of smell, and it locates fruit. It's a fruit eater, as is the other bat located in this exhibit, which is the Rodriguez fruit bat, which is sometimes called the golden bat just because the color of its fur on its body is some kind of goldenish around the head and neck and the shoulders and stuff like that, while the rest of the body is darker. They're only found on a small island in the southwestern Indian Ocean called Rodriguez Island. They are critically endangered. While the Malayan flying fox is not, the Rodriguez fruit bat is very bad off. There are a few large colonies left on the island, but When you start off by just being on one small volcanic island in the middle of the ocean, chances are you're going to be endangered, and these guys are. So they also eat fruit, just like the Malayan flying fox. The fun thing I like to look at with these bats is I like when they open up their wings.
Yeah.
And when the sunlight hits them in the right spot, you can actually see that the wing looks sort of like just almost like a flimsy piece of skin. And you can actually see the bone structure within the bat's wing.
Right.
And if you look closely, you'll see that essentially what the wing is an evolved hand. They have the finger bones of what you and I have of a hand, which spread out and has this webbing and has turned into a wing. It's fascinating to see that.
I love that Disney chose to use bats here to tell a really dramatic telling of the conservation story. Mm-hmm. And how even animals like this, which in the West are feared, are so critical to, you know, as you mentioned, first their conservation, but they're critical to the ecosystem that they live in. And that's mentioned throughout this exhibit as well.
And, you know, one of the interesting things about this exhibit, and I was told this by one of the cast members who are essentially stationed at each exhibit, and sort of you can engage them and ask them questions and things like that. And this particular one told me that one of the trees actually in the middle of the exhibit was not there when the exhibit was built, but instead the bats were eating fruit. They passed their fruit seeds. They dropped the seeds in the guana, and a tree grew. So they actually wow. demonstrate right there in exhibit how important those bats really are to the rainforest, whether that is in Malaysia in the mainland or on the small island of Rodriguez.
Now, you could sit here for a long time and see these guys because they are active. Mm-hmm. They're not just hanging there like people would imagine bats only come out at night. They are active. They move around. When I was there, I happened to be lucky enough on my Wild by Design tour that I went on just recently to the tour stopped there, and one of the animal handlers actually came out and talked about some of the training that they do with these animals, which is basically like a way to sort of give them some sort of mental stimulation. And they were teaching them to respond to whistles, like a noise, so that they would be able to get them in at night with the noise.
Right.
So they would feed them and they would eat something. You know, it was really fascinating. So they're really cool animals. And if you're afraid of bats, you shouldn't be. Walk in, look at these things. They're amazing.
The other interesting thing about this exhibit, which is unlike many other exhibits in the zoo world, is that there is no glass separating you
exactly.
from the bats. The bats could, if they really wanted to, come out into your exhibit. And that's sort of the reason why they built this roundabout for people to not actually see them. The bats are not going to do that because, you know, let's be honest, all the food and all the good perching areas are on their side.
Right.
There's nothing really tempting for them to come over to your side. But what it does is it creates no barrier for you. There's just poles that go up and down that sort of separate you from the bats. So you are, you know, there's no glass, there's no nothing like that that separates you from the bat, which really gets you sort of to appreciate the bats even more.
I agree. When you're done looking through the bats,
before we
go
leave
ahead.
The bats,
yeah, of course.
The one other thing is there are a couple of small exhibits here in this particular community hall. One I know features, for example, a giant centipede. There's a couple of these. Another one features a snake from the area. You know, take a few moments to appreciate them.
And that was just what I was going to say. Before you walk out the door, look around you because there are other things inside this community hall. And details, great details, posters and stuff like you mentioned before. There's lots of great stuff. Mm-hmm. So now you're gonna exit the door opposite the one you came in, and you're gonna walk through the doors of the bat house and enter into the ruins of the former hunting reserve of our old friend King Bima, who we talked about in the beginning.
That's right.
This is an amazing exhibit that you're about to enter, and this is the tiger exhibit. And probably the most elaborately themed zoological exhibit in the park, wouldn't you say?
Not only in the park, but perhaps in the world. I mean, they have really taken steps here to give you a backstory, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But in terms of the exhibit itself, you walk up these steps and you're on this overlook looking out into a field with the tigers and some fountains. The idea is that when King Bhima, or Raja Bhima, built this area, this was where he would hunt. He built this overlook so he can overlook the tigers. He built these fountains because tigers love water. To entice the tigers in, he would be on this overlook, and he would kill the tigers from high up as they played in the water. It's a fascinating way to design this exhibit. And I'm not even getting into the murals yet of the different rajas.
Right, which we're just about to get to. Because you go up, there's a set of stairs where you go up and sort of see the overlook of the first part of the tiger exhibit, of which there are two separate parts here. And the first one you see, you're kind of looking over, like he said, into these ruins of these these fountains and things. And there's usually one or two there. And if you're there on a cool day, hopefully you are now as you're listening to this, you're going to see them kind of walking around through that area and right along the edge of those ruins, because there's a big drop there. And but if they're sleeping, you go around a little bit, and oftentimes they're sleeping but inches away from the windows inside sort of the next section of the exhibit. So let's talk about that next section, which is really the ruins of this palace or right. this area.
Right. And they did a nice job of building these, you know, top to bottom glass walls where you can get a real good look at the tigers if they're over there. And they tend to like to sleep over there for whatever reason. You want me to talk about the four murals?
Yeah, let's do that, because that's the section we're in. So once you go down the stairs and you start continuing forward and you see these glass windows where you can see it's to your left only at this point, where you can see the tigers. And like I said, oftentimes they're sleeping there. But when you walk through there, I think you just passed a couple of murals. Mm-hmm. And just beyond it are a couple of more. So while you're standing here, take a step back and look at these incredible murals, and let's talk about what they are.
Sure. There are four. And I'll go with them in order of who they represent. The first one, and this is the one where the Raja himself is holding a bow and arrow. That is one of the two representations of good old King Bhima himself. He is the hunter. He has with him a couple of cheetah. Now look at those cheetah. They have collars. What does that mean? That means because way back when, in the olden days around the 1500s, 1600s, where this king allegedly built this lodge, he had pet cheetah. The cheetahs lived in India back way, you know, hundreds of years ago, before they became extinct and overhunted. And he had, like many rajas, his own hunting cheetah. He is the only Raja depicted of these four that actually has a weapon of destruction with him. He has his bow and arrow, and he is ready to kill the tiger. That is how he is depicted. The second one I want to talk about is his brother, who took over for him. Now, this is the guy who's sort of in a blue gown. He has with him, he's holding a string of pearls. Take a look at him. Because he has, and notice that he has a plucked flower in his hand, and he also has feathers in his cap. He has an appreciation of nature, but it's not the best appreciation of nature. Instead of, you know, wanting to kill animals, he sort of plucks the flowers. He doesn't preserve the flowers, he plucks them. He plucks the feathers of the bird and uses it as a headdress because he thinks they're so pretty. So while he does appreciate nature more than, say, his brother who he succeeded, he is not quite yet ready to be the perfect, you know, nature loving Raja that right. That you will see coming up.
He appreciates them for selfish reasons.
Selfish reasons. The third one, he's the one that's holding sort of this it's actually a model of the Red Temple, which comes later in the trip. That's the aviary itself, or leading into the aviary. He's holding this model. He's the one that actually built the Red Temple to Ananta that you'll see later. He also does not quite have the same appreciation for nature as you would want. You look around him, you'll see that some palm trees have been knocked over and cleared. He is clearing land to build his Red Temple. Although he claims to appreciate nature and is building this temple to it, he's destroying land to actually do it. And finally, you have the last Raja, and he's the one that looks, he's the one, the older gentleman who's kneeling down and he's covered, you know, surrounded by birds, let's say. He actually is the last of the Rajas. He's the one that gave the royal forest over to the people of Anandapur. He decided to quit being king and just live in nature. You know, he's just surrounded by these birds, and he has the ultimate appreciation for nature. And if the story that these four murals tell, and unfortunately I think, you know, 99.9% of people don't take a moment to really appreciate it.
No.
And it is fascinating and the murals themselves are actually quite beautiful.
And it's the basis upon which this whole design for this whole area was made. And those kind of story elements are what makes the consistency and what makes it so beautiful. I just want to mention one other thing before I tell you to continue through here. You probably just passed what I think is my favorite sign, which says something that although there's a great little painting of a tiger, and the sign says, although there are tigers in the woods, you will be safe upon these well-traveled paths. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it's one of my favorite signs to take a picture of.
Yeah, and you know what the interesting thing about, and again, this is a detail that you'll never pick up unless you read some of the books about Animal Kingdom or follow some of the websites like JomboEveryone.com.
Right, or you're listening to this while you're walking through. Yeah,
right, or listening to this as you're walking through. The sign itself is not quite proper English. That's because it tells the story of how this Anandapur was actually a colony of Britain at one point in time. And they actually misspell Anandapur at the beginning of the trek. They spell it with two O's instead of how it's actually spelled. This is depicting how, for some time, this area was under British rule. And the people of Anandapur didn't quite have English, as English was their second language. So as they were putting these signs up in English, they didn't quite know how to do it right. Any other zoo in the world would just tell, you know, write it in proper English.
Right.
Only Joe Rohde and his boys at Disney Imagineering put this little tweak to it to just sort of immerse you even more.
Now, as you continue walking past the murals of the Rajas, it opens up a bit, and you start to see kind of up on bluffs in front of you and almost surrounding you, certainly to your entire left. You see, well, it takes a few minutes for this to come into, for you to realize this, but you see what obviously are prey animals. And there also happens to be no visual barrier between these animals and the tigers, although I promise you there is one. but you don't see that there. But yet you see this thing. So in front of you are, like I said, in front of you are these what we would call prey animals. So let's talk about what's there a little bit.
Okay, there are three ungulates, let's say. Those are the hoofed animals of Southeast Asia. One of them is the bantang, which is one of the largest wild cattle in the world. And they're very impressive to see. And you can easily tell the males from the females. The males are almost black. They're brown. Their brown fur is so dark. And they obviously have very large horns. And they're much bigger than the females, who are almost a tan. One of the interesting things about these animals is they're endangered. And they're the second species to be a part of San Diego Zoo's frozen zoo. DNA of theirs has been frozen in the event, God forbid, these animals become extinct in the wild. They have the DNA in captivity, this preserve somewhere to bring them back if need be.
Wow.
The other animal here is the Eld deer, which is, sometimes called the brow antlered deer. It is a deer from the Asian, Southeast Asia, also endangered. They're mostly found in India, Burma. One of the interesting things about this, and again, I learned this from one of the cast members who were there. If you walk through the exhibit, and we'll get to that, but there's like a bridge section, and you overlook a bridge, and there's tigers on your right and these guys on your left, you'll see some antlers on the ground.
Right.
They're not fake. Those are the male Eld deer who grows the antlers and sheds them, just like deer here in the United States. They keep theirs out in the exhibit, last year's antlers, just as an additional kind of decor to the exhibit. It's interesting.
They look like they look like small reindeer to me.
I mean, kind of.
It's that kind of antler look.
Yeah, they do. They, and There are a few of them in the exhibit, although in the wild that they can have herds up to 50. There's also black buck, which are very iconic to the Indian grasslands of that area. In fact, you'll see black buck in the mural of King Bhima at the beginning of it. That's what he's hunting, or black buck. They are heavily hunted for many years, obviously, in the Indian area. They are not endangered, however. There are approximately about 50,000 left in India, so they're doing relatively well. They're what's called near threatened. So if things get worse, they can become endangered, but currently they are not. And they're also, this is also where you will see the Souris crane, which are an endangered crane that makes a heck of a racket, as I know you came to find out.
There's also another kind of crane there. I'm not sure what it is, but there are a couple of them there. I think one, I was there one day, and it was because as you continue through, and we're going to go to this in a second, you come to a bridge, but it kind of separates the other part of the tiger area from this area. And this crane was standing and sounded like somebody like blowing a trombone. Right at you. What a racket this thing made.
Yeah, cranes are very loud. I mean, just about all the different types of species of crane, and most of them are endangered. And you know, the Souris crane and the white-nape crane that are both along the Maharaja jungle trek are no exception to the rule. They are, you know, they're migratory. The Souris crane, interestingly enough, is not as migratory as many of the other cranes. They kind of stick to the general area of India. And they have these red heads that during mating season get even brighter. But they're fun birds to watch. They usually mate with, you know, in pairs and stay together for long periods of time. And they're often used as symbols of, you know, marriage and love and affection and that kind of stuff.
I think you see peacocks there too, don't you? Or something like that?
Yeah, the green peafowl are located in the jungle trek around here too. They're closely related to the Indian, you know, the typical peacock that you see just about everywhere. They're a little bit different in that the males and the females don't look that much apart. I mean, they're very similar in appearance as opposed to, obviously, the peacock that we're all familiar with. But they're from Southeast Asia, just like most of the animals here, the green peafowl. And I know I just posted you'll be getting a blog post about the green peafowl coming up.
Correct.
As a safari mic. I'm not sure if that one got published yet or not.
Not yet. It's coming.
So look out for it.
Now you're going to turn now and you'll see the bridge in front of you. But before we get to that bridge, there is on your left another one of these little details. It is water jugs, right?
Oh, sure. The water jugs. Yeah, this is where there's a couple of little interesting things here about for the people of Anandapur. As you may or may not know, potable water in the jungle is very difficult to come by. You know, clean water that people can drink and use. And the story goes is this general area, there is water that's drinkable. So the villagers will often, you know, come here to fill up jugs and bring it back to wherever they're living. Sometimes leaving the jug, sometimes leaving things such as a bike there. But you'll see all sorts of like little jugs and things with people's names etched on them and that kind of stuff there.
And before, yep. And also as you're walking through, you'll see something over your head above the over your head on the bridge, and it's something that you see throughout the whole entire Asia section of the park, certainly through the Maharaja Jungle Trek. And those are prayer flags, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct. They are prayer flags. The idea behind the prayer flags is that they help carry your prayers on the wind up to the heavens to be answered. So that's what those are.
Now on the bridge, stop for a second. Don't walk over through it. On your left, you'll see the animals that we were just talking about, the cranes. To your right, you're now going to see some more tigers.
Correct. This is the last, well, not the last, but another exhibit of the tigers themselves. The Animal Kingdom actually has 6 tigers, and they are, you know, they keep them in different exhibits. There's a couple different exhibits where you can actually see them. The first one that you saw, and then here, where there's another a viewing area for a tiger or two. Interestingly enough, all of them are female. And they're all...
Really?
Yeah, they're all what's called Asian tigers. Now, some people don't know what an Asian tiger is. So let me tell you, there are different subspecies of tigers. There are Bengals. There are Indo-Chinese tigers. There are Malayan tigers. There are Sumatran tigers. And there's one escaping me off the type. Siberian. Siberian, yep. Tigers. Yes, absolutely. The largest of all cats. There are, and there's actually four subspecies that have gone extinct, such as the Javan tiger and a couple of others. But anyway, I digress. Asian tigers, what that means is these tigers are not, quote unquote, purebred. They are not purely Bengal, purely Malayan, or purely Siberian tigers. They're sort of an interbreeding. And as zoos have exhibited tigers over the many, many years, and there are in fact more tigers in captivity than there are in the wild. Certain tigers have lost their genetic purity with different subspecies. These tigers on the Maharaja Jungle Trek will not ever be bred for purposes of keeping the tiger, population alive and well. These are just six females who are being exhibited to demonstrate what a tiger is. So don't expect little baby tigers anytime soon.
And don't expect them to be entered into the Westminster Kennel Club Tiger Show.
Correct. Never in a minute. They will never will be. They are simply fun to look at.
So stop and take a look at the tigers. A lot of times you'll get, especially on warm days, you'll get them in the water there. There's a little water section down there. I've actually seen that drained a few times, but sometimes it's when it's there, you'll actually see them sloshing around through the water.
Right.
When you've finished reading... viewing the tigers, continue walking. You're now going to come around a corner, and on your right, you're going to find a little detail that you might not want to miss. And it's carved into the building itself. And it tells another one of these stories, correct?
Correct. You're talking about the attack on King Bhima?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, this is the second area where good old King Bhima is depicted. This is showing the spot where he was actually, ironically enough, mauled by a tiger and killed. And there's a mural depicting that attack right here.
And these are etched carvings into the... as you continue, there's carvings into the walls, right?
Oh, you're talking about near the Red Temple, the four different carvings of King Ananta?
Yes.
Okay, sure. Yeah, this tells the story. King Ananta was supposed to be the founding father of the kingdom of Anandapur. And there are carvings here that are etched into the stone, as you said, that sort of depict what Ananta went through in terms of his relationship with the animals of Anandapur. The first one shows like men and animals living peacefully. And the second one then shows there's this great tree and all the animals are kind of huddled under the tree, supposedly frightened of King Ananta. The third one shows Ananta himself cutting down trees and scaring away all the animals. The fourth one shows Ananta sort of ticking off the gods as severe storms and flooding has come and is devastating what he is trying to build. And finally, the last one shows man and beast living again together peacefully. And it is right here where King Ananta is supposedly, according to the story, buried. It is his tomb.
And the final one was described to me as called the Tree of Life because it features a tree carving into the, in this whole area, right, in this whole story here.
Right, right. It's a fascinating story. And again, it's another thing that people just wouldn't appreciate unless you're told about it ahead of time.
And right in front of you, you can't miss it, is the Red Temple that we've been talking about. It also happens to serve as another viewing, a glass viewing area for the tiger exhibit. Again, this is another one of those places where if you're lucky, you can get within inches of these tigers. I mean, they come right up to the glass, and I have thousands of pictures literally of that happening.
Right.
But one thing you have missed before you've done that is this very strange looking structure in the middle of the room, which is a tomb.
Right. It's the sarcophagus of King Ananta himself, the founder of the kingdom of Anandapur. And it is where he is allegedly buried.
And through the doors take a look at this tomb for a little bit, because this is one of those details that the Imagineers picked up while trekking through Asia to find these kind of things. I mean, it is just, it's one of those things that I can't imagine anybody else would have thought to put in here. But so take a look at it. And then when you're done, you'll see the doors in front of you to the aviary. And you can walk through those doors. And now you're into the aviary section. It's the final section of the trek. And it has in itself its own theme and its own, backstory to it.
Right. This is allegedly the grand ballroom of the hunting lodge that the King Bhima built. The ballroom, according to the story, was actually built by his brother, the one that we talked about before, who had the second mural. He built this grand ballroom of the lodge to throw parties and stuff like that. And you can see some of the decor kind of broken down and stuff. Some of the birdhouses are very elaborate in here as well. And you are walking through the ruined section of the ballroom as you see all these fascinating birds surrounding you.
And then you go through it and out the other end, correct?
Correct. Don't forget to pick up a little board that'll tell you what the different species are here.
And there are too many to really go into. There are quite a few.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. I mean, you'll find... And I'll post some Safari Mike things about them. I've already had the Nicobar pigeon for one. Another one is a golden pheasant. There's mandarin ducks. Perhaps my particular favorite, I'll just talk about for 1 second, is the Bali Mina. It is a little white bird which has around its eyes blue coloration, blue skin. They are critically endangered, just like the Rodriguez bat. Not unlike the Rodriguez bat, I should say. They're found only in a small island, and there are probably less than 100 left in the wild. And this is an example of an animal that the zoos have really gotten behind. There's a significant population within the zoos, including here at Disney's Animal Kingdom, where they are attempting, so hopefully soon, to re-release them back into the island of Bali to hopefully strengthen the population.
I like the pheasants, because there's a couple of rather large pheasants.
Yeah,
that can often sit there and make a bit of a racket themselves.
Yeah, the golden pheasants are beautiful birds. They're basically golden, this deep crimson red. Take a look out for them. They're really beautiful birds.
And look around at the theming of the fountains and things that are around you as well. Before you go through, the amount of detail and depth going into here is really unparalleled.
Right. Yeah. It's a beautiful aviary.
And that brings us to the end of the Maharaja Jungle Trek, correct?
It does.
So you drop your bird guide back off. You're not allowed to take that home with you.
Nope.
And you head back out towards the village of Anandapur.
Yes.
And that does it for our guided tour of the Maharaja Jungle Trek.
That's true. The only thing, you come back out and you see again, and you referenced them at the beginning as monkeys.
Correct.
They are not monkeys. There are apes.
I'm just a host.
I didn't feel like correcting you at the very beginning of the episode, but I'll correct you now.
Excellent.
They are white-cheeked gibbons and simiangs, and they're both apes. You'll notice that they don't have tails. That's the easiest way to tell.
Now, we want to talk just a little bit more about it. We have some questions we're going to field from you as well. Just to kind of give you how I felt about it, I started writing something, and then one of our friends on Twitter, Kevin Crossman, who, Mike, what's his Twitter handle? It's Animal Kingdom Fans?
Yeah, at Animal Kingdom Fans. Yes, he also has his own at Kevin Crossman.
Yeah, but he runs this kind of Animal Kingdom news Twitter thing that Correct. You should, if you're an Animal Kingdom fan, you should be on that. He sent me this about the Maharaja Jungle Trek. He said, "This is my favorite attraction in the entire park, as it is truly the prototypical example of a Disney's Animal Kingdom attraction. The theming is immersive and multi-layered, with details in every direction. The animal attractions are truly unique in the way you can often be so close to the tigers and bats, animals where being separated by merely inches is a rarity. I'm also a big fan of the Komodo Dragon," so am I, Kevin, "and the aviary there too. This is everything Animal Kingdom should be, an amazing animal experience, but also a theme park setting that transports you to a faraway land." He then writes, "It saddens me when I hear about people calling this place a half-day park, when I could easily spend 30 minutes to an hour just in this attraction by itself. Folks, it isn't a race. Linger and enjoy the surroundings and the animals." I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, this is a... exhibit is the poster child for the anti not a half day park.
Exactly.
If you think Animal Kingdom is a half day park, you're just not doing it right. You're not
right.
Going through the Maharaja Jungle Trek and enjoying that. You're not going through the Tree of Life exhibit. You're not doing that kind of stuff, Pangani, all that kind of stuff that, you know, we talk about. And this is, I agree with Kevin, this is the best of the bunch. They're all pretty good in their own way. They're all great in their own way, I should say. But this one is the best of the bunch.
The Jungle Trek is an e-ticket in scope, to use that phrase. In scope, in its design, in its story. In fact, most of those kind of elements, they go far further, far beyond with this than they do in almost anything else you have experienced before in Disney parks. The story that they tell is a fascinating one, but it's also an important one. You know, it's one that brings cultural challenges that face conservation, a human impact on animals and the things that we can do positively, and right. And most importantly, the things we've done negatively over the past. I hear a lot of people who have microphones like I do pontificate about how much they love the details and the backstories and the things that make Imagineering great, and then they turn around and say that this place is a half-day park and there's nothing to do here. It drives me crazy, and like you said, the Jungle Trek is the poster child for that whole thought. If you think that, you're not paying attention to this.
Absolutely. And not to disparage, like, for example, Pangani Forest Trail, which is incredibly detailed in its theme as well. It's just gorgeous. A different kind of theme.
Yep.
This one really shows the Imagineers what they can do when they're given the opportunity. And, our audience, let's face it, our audience are Disney aficionados. We're not
correct.
People listen to us are people who love the parks and love what Imagineers can do. And you need to hang out and check out this trailer because this is a great example of how Imagineers tell a story.
Let's go through the questions. I know we got a few.
Sure. Lucky enough, we had quite a few, thankfully, all about the Maharaja Jungle Trek. So I'll go through them and we'll answer them as quickly as we can. At Kate Gal asked, how do they keep tigers entertained? Are they all one gender? And what do they feed them?
Okay, well, you talked about the gender.
I did.
I've actually seen them entertain them. They throw like toys and stuff out, correct?
They do throw toys. I know they will throw balls and things like that, usually filled with like little treats and things like that to keep them entertained. Another thing that they'll sometimes do, cats are, all cats, not just tigers, but your house cat, are very attuned to their sense of smell. A lot of times they'll put scents out into the exhibit to get them oftentimes near to where you could get a good view of them, to get them excited and exploring things and stuff like that. So, yeah, they do all that kind of stuff with the tigers. And finally, I guess, what do they feed them? I know they feed them chickens and things like that. I mean, I guess the old joke is that, lost children, but they do not feed them. As far as I know, they don't actually feed them lost children.
No, they don't. At least I've never seen that.
They'll feed them chickens. Not live, they don't, obviously they're dead and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Meat and things like that. I mean, these are carnivores and all they eat is meat. Some zoos will feed them horse meat and things like that, but that kind of stuff.
Okay. Cool.
The next one is from, Jeff, who goes by the Twitter handle of @DisneyWagon. He asks an excellent question. What is the best time of day to view the animals on the Jungle Trek? And when are they most active?
Okay, can I answer that one?
You go right ahead.
This is actually leads me to something I was going to say at the end. This attraction, and specifically the tiger exhibit, is what in spring of 1999, the first time I had a chance to go to the Animal Kingdom, is what made me fall in love with the place. Because I went, it was one of those days where it closes at 6 o'clock. It was very early in April, so the nights were kind of cool. It was kind of not a hot time for April, which is unusual. And I was at this Jungle Trek as they were asking people to leave. It was that late in the day. And the tigers were all over the place. I mean, they were wrestling each other. They were, you know, they were literally like splashing into the water. They had this big red ball that they were beating up against, beating each other with. And I found that from that moment on, not only did I fall in love with the place, but I kind of tried to go back there, you know, when I could. If I was there during closing, I would try to end my day with going to either there or, you know, Pangani, because there's another kind of similar thing that happens with the gorillas kind of late at night. But I find that's the best time. Do you agree?
Absolutely. The two best times, and this is true for any of the trails or even Kilimanjaro safaris or anything that really deals with animal exhibits, the best time to see them is right before they go out for the, you know, if they're done for the day, or when it first opens.
Right.
Now, you're in Disney Park, and a lot of people are not going to spend 9 o'clock in the morning. They're not going to rope drop the Maharaja Jungle Trek. You might want to if you go to the park often enough, because the animals are usually pretty active when they first get out there, because they're first let out and they're examining the area. They want to check out things, and you know, keepers leave the scents out like we talked about before, and some little treats hidden here and there for them to go examine.
Right.
So that's always a good time. And right before they know they're going to go back inside to eat, in their off exhibit enclosures, is another great time to see them. Most people go there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon after they've done the big rides, and you know, a lot of times the tigers are sleeping and you know, all that kind of stuff. So
very cool.
The best time is opening and closing.
Very cool. What's next?
All right, the next one is actually a comment. I have actually two comments.
Yeah, go ahead with those.
One is from Chelsea at Imaginary Cupcake. She said, to me, that attraction is the ultimate Disney Animal Kingdom experience. It's immersive and plays as close to the animals. It puts you as close to the animal as possible. Also continues the theme of animals and humans living in one environment, as evident by the art and ruins along the trek.
Right.
And, you know, she summed up pretty much what we talked about for like the last 45 minutes or so. It does really do a great job of doing that.
You know, she talks about getting you close to the animals, and I just wanted to relay a story that maybe people already know, and I'll go through it quickly because we're kind of long here already. But
shocker.
Yeah, that's just the way it is when we talk about this stuff. But there's a story about the initial planning and the initial phase of sort of developing the Animal Kingdom, and kind of for the Imagineers, Joe Rohde in particular, sort of selling the idea. The suits at Disney weren't really sold on the idea of what they thought to be a zoo. And so there was a planning meeting that involved Michael Eisner and I would imagine a bunch of other people in very expensive suits. And during the meeting, as Rohde is giving his sort of presentation, sort of pitching it at him, a handler walked in the room with a tiger. And walked around the conference table, and that put to rest sort of any idea that animals wouldn't be dramatic for guests, you know. And I always remember that story because you feel that when they come right up to you, especially in the tigers, when they start walking right towards the glass. If you're there, it is truly a moving experience.
Yeah, tigers are an impressive animal.
Yes, they are.
There are a few animals, if you get that close to them, are as impressive as a tiger. I mean, bears and elephants and things like that. So yes, that really, it moves people to be that close to a tiger. Absolutely.
And what was the other comment?
Sure. This is from Natalie at Fantasy Fair. This is a little bit, perhaps a little bit tongue-in-cheek, although I know she likes them. Maybe just do a whole episode on how great the giant fruit bats are. I agree with her. That exhibit is one of my favorite in all of in any zoo is the giant fruit bat exhibit, and those are fun animals to watch. So I do agree with her.
Yeah, stay tuned around Halloween. You never know what might happen then.
Exactly. The next question. Now we're back to questions. This is from Jen Williams, who goes by the Twitter handle of @zeromuch. Is there ample viewing space, especially near the tigers? I think so. I think there's plenty of spaces to see the tigers. Sometimes some of the portions, if you go in there during the middle of the day, some areas can get a little bit more crowded than others. I know the bat house, for example, can get a little tight.
Sure.
Sometimes, and getting over that bridge can sometimes be a little tight. But sure. I think they do the designers of this exhibit do a pretty good job of giving you plenty of viewing space and from different angles too, especially of the tigers.
Yeah, they decided obviously to go with, rather than one big viewing area, which would kill sort of the atmosphere and the ability to design certain elements, they went with a bunch of small ones. So if there is a tiger doing something right in front of a certain viewing area, yeah, you might get a little bit of crush of people there. But just be patient, because they're going to move along. So you'll get your front row seat. So get your camera ready.
Right. The next question comes from our good friend at Planet Hoyt. He asked me the question, what is the purpose, a trivia question, what is the purpose of the Bat House to the Anand Dapur storyline?
Which you mentioned.
We already went over this.
Right.
It's called, just for anybody's future reference, and you'll see a reference to this along the trail, it is Public Meeting Hall at Avika Station Number 12. It is the community hall of Anandapur.
There you go. That is well and truly answered.
At Alaska Disney Girl asked me, what is your favorite area of the trek that you feel is most often overlooked?
Overlooked?
Yes. And it's a little bit hard because it's, there's few areas. I will tell you, probably back in the day would have been the taper.
Yeah.
That was a small exhibit. It was kind of like tucked off a little bit to the side. There wasn't a lot of good viewing space. It's kind of more of an oblong area. I love that taper, and I do miss her.
Yeah.
Now I would, probably, I'm going to say maybe the little exhibits in the Bat House that people kind of blow by, they don't really look at, like the giant centipede.
That's what I was going to say.
The frog in there. That's probably the most overlooked. And if you're into creepy crawlies, you might enjoy that.
Yeah, rather than going for a lot of different species, they decided to really kind of impact the guest with a really strong viewing area of each and every one of these. And there's not a lot of different animals in the Maharaj Jungle Trek, even though there's a huge space devoted to them. So there's not much to overlook. It's certainly easy to blow through the aviary without seeing, everything that's there. That can, you have to really set aside some time there, which I hope you would do. You would, set aside, 15, 20 minutes just for the aviary alone to kind of look around and see some of these things. But
yeah, that's a good point.
The aviary probably is it.
Yeah. Okay. The next one is from at Loki Disney. He asked, are there any hidden Imagineers signatures on the train? This is an interesting one. And, yeah. As for many people know, Harambe has a couple of these where they sort of reference Imagineers. And obviously, we're all thinking of Main Street, and where they have the windows.
Right.
There, I actually asked at Planet Hoyt for some help on this one, as he is a former cast member who did the Wild by Design tour. And he told me, essentially, and I couldn't think of any. I didn't know of any.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
The only thing he said that really answers that question is if you blow past the bats, if you go like sort of the passageway so that you don't see the bats, and considering I never do this since I love the bat exhibit, I wouldn't really notice this, but there's some pictures depicting the actual area where the bats, where that exhibit was designed. The bat cliffs were actually designed from. As many of you know, the Imagineers went to these various places, such as Kenya, right, such as Nepal, and things like that, to sort of get their inspiration. And there's a picture of Joe Rohde. We can only see him from behind. You don't really know it's actually Joe Rohde looking at the cliffs.
That's kind of a signature, but not really.
That's the closest thing.
Yeah, that's not. I didn't think there was one. You asked me this question before we went on air, and I thought about it. And I had just, like I said before, I'd just been through the Wild by Design tour. And I don't remember. I remember them pointing them out in other places in the park, but not here. So,
yeah. Two more questions. The second to last one here is from at Paul. It's Bousquet, Bousquet. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce it. Paul, I apologize if I butchered your name.
That's okay.
He's a new follower of mine, so welcome aboard. He says, or he asks, I should say, is there any benefit of doing the trek in the opposite direction? In other words, starting with the birds and ending with the Komodo dragon. I can't think of any benefit.
Other than you're pulling on the door instead of pushing it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
That's probably it.
you are going in the opposite direction of hordes of people sometimes.
That's so a problem.
That could prevent you from doing that.
Yeah.
There's nothing really negative about doing it in the opposite direction that I can think of. I mean,
and nobody's going to stop you.
Yeah, nobody's going to stop you. So right. If you want to try it, go right ahead. But I don't really see too much of a benefit that I can think of.
Yeah, because the story's not told chronologically through the attraction. It's told sort of piecemeal. It's kind of like detailed in.
Correct.
So it's not like you're missing a story or getting it backwards, you know.
Right. So instead of entering the woods and seeing the Komodo dragon and the old exhibit tapers and then getting to the community hall and then entering the lodge,
right,
you're actually entering the temple, going through the lodge, and leaving the woods. I mean, there's not really that much of a great question. That was a good question.
I never even thought about that. You know what? Paul was his name?
Yeah.
I'm going to do that next time. Never thought of
that. Report back.
I will. I'll do a video walkthrough so everybody can see the Maharaja Jungle Trek backwards.
The last one is one I think you got on your Twitter when you tweeted this out.
Yeah.
This is from Matt at mholly579. He asked, any possible expansion or new animals?
Well, yeah, I got that question. I don't think expansion is in the cards.
I doubt it.
But new animals can always happen. I mean, they've changed animals in and out of exhibits.
Sure.
Right? I mean,
we talked about the taper that was there initially, and now it's some Asiatic waterfowl. You know, every once in a while they'll change some of the bird species in that aviary, depending on what's going on. I would not anticipate an expansion. There is room behind the Maharaja Jungle Trek that's not being used technically. But what they would have to do is they would have to, for example, remove the exhibit of the Batang and the Eld's Deer and like expand out. Because right now it's in a convenient loop. So you sort of start off and you loop around, you exit almost where you started. They can't really just sort of add to that.
Right.
They would have to, you know, take out an exhibit and stretch the loop out more, which technically they could do.
Sure.
But I doubt they would spend the money to go ahead and do that. What you more likely would see is maybe switching around some animals, maybe get tapirs back or different tigers at some point in time or something along those lines.
Right, which you can expect to find.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, talk to the cast members that are there because they'll tell you if anything is new. You know, if anybody has just shown up or a new species brought in. And they're always there to talk to you, and they actually love to speak to people. So engage these cast members. They really got some great stuff to talk about.
It is, you know, one of the benefits of Disney's Animal Kingdom are these cast members who are at each of these exhibits. And, you know, this is essentially what I did for 18 years at the Bronx Zoo. I would station myself in an exhibit such as polar bears or whatever and just sort of engage the people and talk to them about, you know, what a polar bear is and, you know, different fun facts about polar bears and, you know, what's going on in conservation and that kind of stuff. And they're always great avenues of information. So I gave you some of those examples as we were talking about the Eld's Deer horn, antlers and that kind of stuff. They're great for that kind of stuff.
And they're not going to be pushy about it either. They're really kind of just going to hang back and wait for you to engage them. So don't expect them to, like, you know, start throwing trivia at you and getting everybody involved. It's not that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
They're there for you. They're dressed in period, you know, in uniform, so you can recognize them right away. And they're oftentimes holding something, or so, you know, engage them, and they're really great to talk to.
I agree.
So is that it? Have we come to the end of the trek?
I think we have.
All right. Well, listen, thank you once again for listening to Radio Harambe. For more information on the Animal Kingdom, we certainly invite you to visit us at jomboeveryone.com. There you're going to find everything you need to know about the park, including attractions. We got dining reviews. We got photos from everywhere. We got a great photo gallery from the Maharaja Jungle Trek as well. There's also lots of information on there about the animals and also conservation. You can find us both on Twitter. I am now conveniently enough found at Radio Harambe. And Mike can be found at Jombo Everyone. So you come to one of those Twitter handles, Radio Harambe or Jombo Everyone, you're going to find one of us. We are also on Facebook and YouTube. All those links can be found on jomboeveryone.com. Don't forget about our store. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, we have these great new Not a Half Day Park t-shirts available. Anytime you buy one, we're going to donate half of our profits to our conservation partners. The other half goes to really keeping this show alive and getting us going here. You can find that at Zazzle.com/Jombo. Everyone, we also invite you and ask you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. And also, please, if you can, rate and review us there. As I am told, it really helps kind of get the word out and kind of get our rankings up in iTunes, which makes us, you know, gives us more listeners and kind of gets, you know, Radio Harambe some more ears onto our lovely voices here. So if you can do that, that would be great. We're also available on Stitcher and on Podbean. So for Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride, Kwaharini, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.